Blog Talk Radio.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying sign. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Time for a Plan. This is episode number 6, and today is September 28th, 2010. As always, joining me on this show is Gary Hunt, and we'll get the show started off today. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you, Randy. And we're going to go through the, some people would call it a legal disclaimer, I call it a CYA. A question was raised a few months ago in a conversation. The question was, could a revolution be conducted in the modern world considering modern technology, extensive government troops, and battlefield weapons? At first, the task seemed so ominous, so daunting, and against such odds, it would be impractical, if not impossible. Upon reflecting on what must have been an equally daunting to the founding fathers, it is not, as first anticipated, such an ominous task. Now, this is a theoretical answer to that question. Theoretical. That means do not follow the instructions or something like that. I'm not sure what it's supposed to mean. But we talked about the first two steps in this progressive plan. Don't use progressive with a capital P like the people in politics do. This is a progression. It starts small and gets larger as it goes. But the first element was small units, small acts of aggravation. This is where people in individual leaderless cells or security teams, without any support except consideration of their target and the effect of the target would have on the public, makes decisions on their own to begin committing acts that would indicate that some people in the citizens of this, among the citizens of this country, are dissatisfied with the way things are going. Some examples of targets would be law enforcement officers who have abused citizens without provocation, insurance companies who have not fulfilled their obligations for losses sustained, people in positions of public trust who have blatantly violated their oath of office, people in positions of public trust who have blatantly lied to the American public, people who have proven themselves inimical to the Constitution, industries which provide military-type equipment to law enforcement organizations or agencies, Federal Reserve banks, and special interest groups inimical to the Constitution, like ACORN and SEIU. Now, ironically, that lead-in song, For What It's Worth, by Buffalo Springfield, had to do with some riots, demonstrations in the 60s that were primarily against Bank of America. And that song was written specifically about one incident in California where Bank of America was the target. The next step, then, would be to expand units joined together in small regions, say counties, for greater acts of aggravation. Now, as each team goes out and conducts these activities, the activities are illegal, understand that. And there's a consequence, there's a risk if you're caught. But they go out and conduct these activities and become comfortable that their unit has not been infiltrated, that they've got cohesiveness within their unit. At that point, they might be able to branch out and find another unit or two or three, probably people they know already, and they both feel comfortable with their activity and feel that they can work together and be more effective. So at this point, we begin a slow escalation of the capabilities of this side. Bigger activities where they can put flank guards on and have a reserve unit, for example, in case they run into problems. All of a sudden, the ability to conduct these acts of aggregations is aggravation are increased considerably because we've now got a larger force than, say, between 3 and 5, 9, 7, 8, 9 people in the single unit. That we start putting them together, we end up with 20, 30, 40, perhaps 50 people that can work in concert, each unit working as a squad, and then the duties being assigned by whoever has picked the target, and they go out and conduct their activities with a higher degree of security, as far as physical protection at least, by joining the units together. Then when we get to the third element, which we began discussing last week, we've got an element where the roles of the Committee of Safety begin to come in here, because there's turmoil, there's havoc, there's chaos going in certain areas where things are happening, where you've got active units. There's no telling what the government's capable of doing, and I'll use an incident, what was that called, Katrina? Yeah, where the government was totally unable to cope with the problem. Who knows? They might come in and close the hospitals, do all sorts of things. So the Committee of Safety comes in now in its proper role to protect the community, to make sure that there's continuity in government, that the hospitals stay open, that communications stay open, that the grocery stores stay open, the doctors treat gunshot wounds without reporting to the police department, things like that, you know. But they make their presence known, that they become, at this point, they become an element of what's happening, but they're doing it in a protective nature. They're doing it as collective defense of their own communities. The quick list that I ran through last week, hospitals and other medical facilities, communications facilities, public utilities, public transportation, production and transportation of food and other necessities, commercial transportation of necessary projects, emergency operations centers. So that's where we ended up last week. Now, the plan should be prepared to take over the operations of these facilities using militia teams to assure that those who regularly work in these facilities continue to operate efficiently, or to replace those with militia members or volunteers where the reliability of the existing personnel comes into question. So you're there making sure that this thing continues to function as it should. One of the most important things, and it was pointed out for those that caught the second part of Resistance to Tyranny, is very important that the local community, they might be told bad things about you, but you demonstrate nothing to them that makes you a bad guy. So if you're keeping the hospital open and an emergency arises and the ambulance comes, picks you up, takes you to the hospital, And they say the militia assigned by the Committee of Safety is there to make sure the hospital doors are open and that you'll get the service you need. Regardless of what might be coming over the press, you have created a good image in the minds of those people. And that's important because our purpose, if it's to restore the Constitution, is to have a government that serves the people. And that will perhaps be the first time they've seen the government serve the people in many, many years. So the necessity of keeping that good faith of the public is always one of the paramount considerations. The only thing more paramount than that, in some cases, is saving your own life. Because if you can't fight tomorrow, you ain't no good to us. But you always have to consider anything that you do should not be detrimental to the image the people see of the committees of safety beginning to instill themselves as a proper community government. I'm sure at that point, too, the membership of the Committee of Safety will begin swelling as people realize that, hey, I can participate in government and make sure that things go the way they should go. What better way to demonstrate that than joining the Committee of Safety?
Well, you know, you brought up a good point there as well also. You know, public support is vital. You know, if the Founding Fathers didn't have public support during the Revolutionary War, we wouldn't be a country right now. If all of these other, you know, freedom fighters that are out there that are trying to overthrow tyranny in their country didn't have public support, they would be dead in the water. And we can start doing that right now. In fact, the Pennsylvania Militia Civilian Defense Force is doing incredibly good work in the PR area by going out and cutting cords of wood for elderly people, food drives, habitat, you know, volunteering in Habitat of Humanity, and they're all doing this openly, stating that we are the Pennsylvania Militia Civilian Defense Force, and we're coming out here to help our communities. Iowa Citizens Militia, Second Iowa Citizens Militia, or Citizens Marines, they went out and they did a flood cleanup, and they helped people get back into homes and open their businesses in Iowa after a dam broke, taking out three counties and wiping everything out. There are ways to improve your image with your militia in your community. This is one of those ways.
Now, just to add to that, and remember, this whole thing is predicated on looking at what the founders did and adapting that to modern times. Now, Washington had standing orders that the citizens shall not be abused, even the Tory families, as long as they did not provoke an action. About the only time there was significant violation of that was during the winter at Valley Forge, when he had sent out foraging teams, and people did not want to give up their stores, but to provide for the soldiers who would have starved at Valley Forge. The foraging parties would take the chickens, the cows, whatever they needed, leaving some for the family. Maybe not enough to winter, but leaving some for the family and leaving a little chit saying what they've taken and assigning prices to it. But that was the only time under orders that anybody was ever allowed to abuse the citizenry in the conduct of their duties. So Washington even realized the importance of keeping the people in the countryside tuned to what they were doing and supportive of it, except for the minor incidents. And so we're in the same situation, in this theoretical situation, where we've got to do everything we can. Now, if it's of necessity and you need a truck, you write a note saying, I've taken this truck, 1997 Dodge diesel pickup truck. I've conscripted it for service for an emergency, and give the guy the note. The Committee of Safety then will have to make sure that he's compensated for the use of it if it's returned, or the vehicle itself, so he can replace it if it's not. It's very important to keep as many people on our side as possible. Now, everyone that you keep on our side will tell his friends that he's on our side, which will bring them on, even if they don't have any direct relationship with us, because they'll recognize that their friend wouldn't lie to them. So it can grow, but by the same token, if there's a negative, and he tells his friends, that negative will grow probably faster than the positive. Now, consideration might also be made to provide county or city government where necessary. This would include only performing necessary functions of government. If, as happened during the Revolution, town meetings abandoned because they were Tory when the Whigs were in the area, the American side, governments had to be put in place. And so the committees of safety would form in those. Now, earlier, as we discussed, committees of safety formed when the royal government didn't serve the purpose. So if you have a county or city government where the administration of that government flees for fear of their life, then there might be good reason for them fleeing for fear of their life. If they made $800,000 a year in a small community, that'd be a good target, wouldn't it? At any rate, if they fled in the city government, nobody holds it together, or the county government, it's the role of the Committee of Safety now to go in and institute the Committee of Safety as an interim government until such time as normal government under the Constitution can resume its activity within the community. So there will be places where the doors are open, basically the empty city hall or county chambers, saying, come on in and take me, and we need to fill in those functions, keep as much of the city staff as possible. Now, I'm going to mention something now, and you'll hear it from time to time. They should all take a loyalty oath. That loyalty oath was very common in Revolutionary period. If people took a loyalty oath, they were taken at their word, and unless they disproved their obedience to that loyalty oath that they took, and that loyalty oath was to the Continental Congress, unless they disproved their obedience to that oath, they were allowed to continue in their business, in their capacity, whatever they were doing in life, until they proved that they were inimical to the cause of liberty. So by the same token, when you go into a city and there's a bunch of people there that are scared and nervous saying, you're not going to kill us, are you? No. How many of you are willing to take the loyalty oath to the de jure government, the Committee of Safety, and the Constitution, and continue operating in the capacity you have, helping your city maintain and providing the services that it should provide? And everybody that was willing to take the loyalty oath then should be brought back into the fold on the correct side of the fold this time. And, hey, we've got even more friends because they still had their job and they thought they were going to lose it when the mayor fled town. Creation of a working judicial system will be necessary to replace those which are no longer operational or are operating outside of constitutional restraints. A judicial committee should be formed by those versed in legal functions. So within the Committee of Safety now, you want to look at those that have legal expertise. And there are a lot of people in the Committee of Safety that do, and there are a lot of people are on our side that do, and there are a lot of on our side that think that they do. But the thing is, we've got to have a functioning judicial system, at least in criminal matters. Now, when I say at least in criminal matters, crime's got to be punished. If you've got some guy going in and breaking and looting because of what's going on in the town, you want to put him in jail for a while. But civil actions, foreclosures, everything on the civil side should stop immediately and be held in abeyance. Why? Well, they did it during the Revolution, and they did it for a reason. There were some serious problems with money circulating even before the Revolution began, but after the Revolution began, it became even more critical. Now, we've got foreclosures going now, and interestingly, most of those foreclosures, say somebody borrowed $300,000 to buy a house, the bank, by virtue of the fractional banking system, probably had $30,000 in assets and were able to loan $300,000 on it. So we want to hold those off because it might be that when everything settles out that we find that the homeowner who borrowed $300,000 when the bank only had $30,000 to loan should get credit for the $270,000 that the bank did not have to loan, and that would be a judicial system decision under a civil action, but that has to be sorted out because when we went through the petition, you saw that we have to get rid of the Federal Reserve. We have a five-year period to do it. We've got to get rid of Federal Reserve notes. We've got to get rid of the fractional banking system. So if those elements are gone, the evaluation, the true value of the loan has to be assessed, because if we get rid of the Federal Reserve notes and go back to specie currency or specie-based currency, that $300,000 won't mean the same thing that it will after we get back to that. A good example is, in a specie-based system, when I was a kid, a nickel candy bar cost 5 cents. That nickel candy bar cost 20 cents, or over a dollar now. So it's 20 times more expensive than it was. But if silver, which was worth a dollar an ounce then, is worth $20 now, there's the $20 difference. So it costs 20 times more, because the way we count the money has gone up by a magnitude of 20. $1 is now 20 in silver. So 5 cents is now $1 in purchase price. So to say that a $300,000 house is priced fairly at $300,000 and that should be repaid because that was what was borrowed doesn't fit the scenario of going back to specie currency, and would be unfair to the buyer, because the bank then would get $300,000, which would be the equivalent of $6 million if we factor it up by 20, if they got $300,000 in specie-based money for that $300,000 or loan. So that decision has to be put off. Therefore, we can't proceed with judicial matters or civil matters. Likewise, if there's a debt owed for something or a breach of contract or anything, that's not important enough to waste the time of the jury, of the judicial committee, of the judiciary, and even the people. One reason somebody might be on a militia unit that's assigned elsewhere and can't attend, these can be put off. They're not important. What's important is restoration of the Constitution. So we follow the footsteps of the founders once again and put off civil matters until such time as they can be dealt with properly. Criminal matters, however, have to be dealt with. We can't have people thinking anarchy reigns and they can do whatever they can get away with.
One of the points what the committees of safety during the Revolutionary War as well. That was the purpose that they served there. They kept government running. There was a continuity of government. There was a continuity of commerce and trade. There was a continuity of the courts and the judicial system. There was a continuity of law.
Now, I'll give you some examples of some of the actions of the committees of safety, judicial actions, though. If somebody was charged of being inimical to the cause of liberty or a friend of the British and stood trial, and by testimony it was proven that he was not on the side of liberty but was on the side of the British, they would take his long rifle, but they would not take his hand firearms. He would be allowed to keep his pistol for self-defense. He was required to stay in his own home or on his own property, and he wasn't put in jail. Honor meant something back then, because if somebody gave their honor, in fact, a good example is officers, when captured by either side, were put on parole. If a revolutionary officer were captured in an action and the British were in New York, they'd take him to New York. He'd be able to roam the streets of New York because he gave his word that he wouldn't leave. Now, on the other side, all of the officers, Hessian or otherwise, were allowed parole. Sometimes some of the non-commissioned officers were allowed parole because it's a lot cheaper to let a guy on his honor walk the streets and provide for himself, chop firewood if he has to feed himself, than it is for the Continental Congress to come up with food for the prisoners as well as their own soldiers. So honor can be something that we can bring reinstitute. Now, if somebody violates that honor, it's his problem from then on in.
Right.
But to think that we should show that we are respectful people, and if you give your word, we will accept your word, I think takes a guy that might have thought we were bad guys, and, hey, these guys aren't bad after all. If we had captured them under the same circumstances, we'd have them in jail on bread and water. So, again, everything we do needs to be directed at establishing a good rapport with anybody in the community, even the enemy that remains in the community, the rebels. Okay, occupation of any emergency operations would be beneficial since operation centers would be beneficial since these are self-contained, self-supporting, and very defensible facilities. If the militia were to secure them, they would make an ideal operation center for both the committee and the militia. Now, I'm not sure how many have seen them, but the days of the jail on the side of the boardwalk street is long gone. Now, the jail facilities are still independent, but and the sheriff's office might be independent, but quite often sheriff's departments and police departments in larger communities have what's called an operations center. Generally, that operations center is at least partially underground. It has emergency generation equipment. It has emergency food supplies, emergency water supplies. It has very sophisticated communication systems. Sometimes they're tied into the long line system, which is buried 80 feet or more in the ground. So they're very sophisticated. Now, they also give us the means to begin communicating with the rebel government in other parts of the state, the rebel government in other states, and the rebel government in Washington, D.C., because as this begins to progress, the opportunity to start affording the or demonstrating the willingness to work with anybody in the rebel government who recognizes the Constitution as the supreme law of the land becomes pretty important.
You know, I want to bring up a point there. We've talked about this quite a bit, Gary. You know, if we make these politicians feel that their back is to the wall and they have no recourse, no outcome, and no way to make amends, they will turn. They will stand firm in their position. They will not. You know, they won't. Even if they know that they should stop and, you know, come side with us, we've given them no option. That option always has to be open to switch sides and come back to us.
Not only open, it should have a red carpet laying right up to the door. And so these emergency operations centers would be an ideal way of beginning to communicate with, say, Department of Defense as far as ceasing operations in foreign countries, bringing troops back here, putting those troops on leave so they can go home and be with their families during the current turmoil in the country. Just think what would happen if the soldier found out that the committees of safety requested DOD to give them a leave with pay so that they could go home and protect their family.
Now, real
Maybe
quick.
You can tell them to take their rifle with them.
Now, real quick, we were talking, you mentioned the rebel government a couple times, and there was, I want to clarify that now. The rebel government, as we're calling them, would be those who have positioned themselves in violation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, which would be
right.
Those.
They have rebelled against the Constitution. They are the rebels. We all look at the rebels as the bad guys. I mean, there's a tendency to look that way unless you know to the contrary. Well, who are the bad guys? So let's call them what they are. They're the rebels. They have stolen our Constitution. They have usurped authority. They have abrogated their responsibility. And we're trying to get back to that Constitution. Who is the rebel in this case? So when I say rebel government, yes, I'm sorry I didn't make it clear. The rebel government is those people currently in Washington, currently in your state capital, currently in your county and city in most cases. Okay, are we clear on that now?
I think we're clear on that. There was a couple comments in the chat room about
well,
that.
Well, we're clarifying.
So I wanted to clarify that one so everybody could understand. Now, we're not talking about the rebel government being the people that are the rightful sovereigns of this country, the rightful rulers of this country, we the people. We're talking about the criminal element that in any government that has taken over the country in violation of the law of the land, in violation of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, regardless of the fact that they had apparent legitimacy in getting there, doesn't mean that they're not infiltrating the government with the intention of taking it over and subverting the Constitution. Now, what I said is consideration might also be made to provide county or city governments where necessary. Or wait, no, I passed that. Ways and means, okay, ways. Now, I want to go back to that. I said necessary functions of government. One of the necessary functions of government is maintenance of roads and bridges, public utilities to the extent the city's taken over, responding to fallen trees in the roadway, things like that. Not necessary functions are distribution of your money to somebody unwilling to work for it. However, we've got a problem here. We can't starve people to death. So in lieu of welfare or unemployment. Since we've suspended civil actions, people don't have to pay their mortgage. They do have to eat. They do have to have medical attention. They do have to have the necessities of life. And so one of the necessary functions of the government is to make sure people don't starve to death, freeze to death, get washed away in a rain, so that they that providing food or shelter and medical care have to be assumed as necessary functions in government in lieu of welfare and other entitlement programs that give people money for nothing. So keep that in mind, too. And this, again, is in line to making sure that people are not put out by the actions of the Committee of Safety and our side of the situation. Occupation of any emergency ways and means need to be developed so that supplies for the militia and other necessary supplies can be provided, as well as compensation for active militia duty. Securing property of those inimical to the Constitution, as well as resources of Federal Reserve banks, can provide for financial means. Now, the Tories' homes were sold in many cases, and that was one of the sticklers in the Treaty of Paris. The losses were supposed to be paid, and the representatives of the Continental Congress, under the Articles of Confederation, said okay, but they knew when they said okay that decision was the case of the states, or the decision of the states, not of the Continental Congress, which led to the War of 1812, because just about no compensation was made for Tory estates that were taken and sold to provide funding for the conduct of the Revolutionary War from our side. But if somebody's really a bad guy, there's nothing wrong with taking his property and then letting the determination, the civil action determination of whether there should be restitution and to what extent, let that slide to the end, because right now we've got an asset. They're probably not occupying it because they fled, and there's no reason in the world not to use that resource then to make it so that we can purchase the food and the medical supplies and things that are necessary to keep the community safe and secure. Same thing with the Federal Reserve Bank. Usually they have a little bit of cash in them, not very much nowadays, surprisingly. But I'm sure that the Federal Reserve Banks, now when I say Federal Reserve Bank, there are 9 Federal Reserve Banks. Most other banks are subordinate to the Federal Reserve. If a bank empties itself with or without all the cash, they have fled town, they have taken sides, they are Tories, they've gone to New York to hide and cower, or maybe to Canada or something. They have said what they stand for by abandoning their bank. Those banks where the staff stays on and conducts business and assists people in the community, they are respectable, and they're probably in the Federal Reserve System because they have no choice. And so they operate as usual. But when they're abandoned by their officers, a bank becomes fair game, just like the property that belongs to those inimical to the Constitution. So Ways and Means has a way of, to some degree, helping itself out. There might be a point that knowing that, now the 9 major Federal Reserve banks, St. Louis, New York, San Francisco, wherever they are, they would be targets for takeover as far as I'm concerned, because they're the bad guys. Most of our evils today are in consequence to the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, the 1933 banking holiday, the taking of gold, and subsequently the taking of silver, the fractional reserve banking system, the fiat currency we have. So those 9 banks, though, come in that category up at the top that are targets. Now, if you're going to blow up a bank in the middle of the night, try and figure out where the money is, so that you don't blow up the money, because it might come in handy, because we will have to have some medium of exchange in the country during this transition period. And that, unless somebody's got a better idea, that will have to be Federal Reserve notes for the time being. Now, if you've got gold and silver, it's going to have a disproportionate value to the Federal Reserve notes, silver 20 to 1. Or maybe greater at that point. You know, the value of anything is what somebody else is willing to pay for it. Later on, we'll be talking about an economic solution But that economic solution won't come until later steps in this progression of events in resecuring constitutional government in this country. But Federal Reserve banks, the nine banks, are definitely targets. The other banks, the bank officers will show you if they're good guys or bad guys by whether they stay with their community or abandon their community. At this point, public relations, this point in activity begins the transition in the approach of public relations. Prior to this point, most of the public relations has been for justification or at least mitigation of activities that have been taken in accordance with this plan. Public relations should become more aggressive in encouraging support for the activities and encouragement of others' activities who have previously sat on the fence to make decisions regarding the future of their lives and their own children. So at this point, public relations starts saying, which side of the fence are you on? Are you going to support this cause? Now, I'm not saying pick up a rifle, but go down to your local committee of safety, join them, help them. Let's start looking out for our own future. So the press now all of a sudden has taken a turn. They've not abandoned their previous activity of helping to justify or mitigate the activities taken by the cells and the security teams, but now they're beginning to promote participation in the peaceful activities of the Committee of Safety, and they are peaceful. They're all designed in collective self-defense, self-preservation, sustainment of the community, provision of the necessary services of the community. So it should be an easy task now to begin encouraging people to pick a side in what's going on. Having successfully achieved this point in the progression of the plan, belief in the ability to achieve the goals of constitutional return to constitutional government can be looked upon more favorably. The potential for success is perhaps the greatest motivator for the participation by those who have previously sat and watched. So we have progressed on the third step now to a point that we have not gotten anybody, unless they had good reason to be, pissed off at us. And we've created a scenario where those that have been sitting saying, what the hell is going on, are beginning to understand what's going on and beginning to see the good guys, who the good guys are in this whole episode. Now, the militia duties in this third level, at the direction of the committees, the militia shall be pretty active at this point. Much of what they will be involved in will be garrison-type duty, securing facilities, defensive, to assure that anything that has been gained is maintained, and offensive actions to secure additional facilities. Now, when I say offensive actions to secure additional facilities, let's say you've taken over a town of 80,000 people and everybody's pretty much joined you, but you've got some holdouts, say in the telephone company or the Federal Reserve Bank, they've armed themselves and they've got their rifles pointing out the door, or there's an emergency operations center surrounded by people on our side, but it's sitting there dug in, it's got its emergency generators on, you've cut power to it, they still have communication, they got their food supply. And so to lay siege on them, just to keep them encompassed, might be a job for the committee. To avoid battle is the ideal opportunity. Law is enforced because the cop has the gun. Now, when we have the guns in sufficient numbers in the hands of the militia, it's not necessary to use those guns all the time. They should only be used if absolutely necessary. But the fact that you've got a bunch of them, say, surrounding a bank that is armed to the teeth protecting the bank because they didn't flee, or the Southern Bell Telephone Company because Southern Bell doesn't want you to have access to their secure rooms or anything like that, then those have to be taken by the implied use of force or, if necessary, by force. So the militia duties at this point are generally garrison. They might be filling in. If you've got a hospital where you've got questions about some of the people, It wouldn't hurt to have a couple militia members on duty 24 hours a day to assure that people get treated properly by the hospital staff until you're comfortable that it'll operate without your assistance, because there are always going to be people that will take the loyalty oath and not mean what they're saying, especially attorneys and law enforcement officers who have been brought up lying. But the duties of the militia at this point really become, first time they become confrontational, perhaps from an offensive standpoint. So offensive actions to secure areas, displace rebels, and confront rebel forces will become an active part of the militia duty, if necessary. Recruitment and cooperation with other units will be absolutely necessary. Command structure will be determined by the committees of safety, cooperating with the other committees within the county or a newly created county committee of safety. Go, Randy.
Yes. Well, we had a question from the chat room, and somebody was asking, and we both have ideas on this as well. But Randy, Gary, so how do we start this? Go door to door in the neighborhood and say, "Hi, I'm your neighbor. This shit's going to hit the fan soon. We need to band together." Because as we know, that the majority of people out there are they're not aware of what's going on yet. They have no idea what the Constitution says. So it is hard to find people, but. TC, I'll give you my two cents. First off, I'm up here in Canada. Socialism central in North America, let me tell you, the people here are asleep. And it takes time and effort and energy, but you have to put it in. And if you're not, I put in 2 hours a day minimum into street work, face-to-face work, talking.
Kicking rocks.
You know, I bang on doors. I go to neighbors' homes. I find, I browse the internet for people that are in my area, and I go after them. I try to find people from everywhere, and because of that, I've started to develop a nice little network here. I've got 4 or 5 in it so far, and it's growing. And if I can do that here, you could do that in your town, because, well, Americans are much more awake than we are, than Canadians are. So, where do you start? VFWs, Legions, go to the local hunting, camping store, firearm store. Put up a poster, put up a flyer. We're going to start making some marketing materials for the COS, for the committees of safety. Start handing those out. There's a lot of different ways, but it takes getting off the couch, off the computer, out of your house, and back into the street every day.
Okay, now that you've heard what Randy's have to say, let me say that there's nothing wrong with what Randy said, but you have to look at it a little differently. Let's look at two sides to our side. One is the Committee of Safety and the militia. And remember, in the first two elements, they played no part at all. Now, a committee member might, when he is not in his official capacity, be a member of a security team or a leaderless cell. A militia member, when he's not operating in his official capacity, might be a member of a security team or a cell. But the Committee of Safety and the militia are there to protect and defend the community against invasion. Their purpose for the first two stages has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on. The only thing that I recommend that they consider is that if somebody who was part of one of these actions, the government's trying to arrest them without indictment by a grand jury as required by the Constitution, the committee and the militia could, if they choose to, provide protection, security, or transportation to another location to people that are subject to arbitrary arrest by the rebel government. Aside from that, though, and like I say, some people in the committees and some people in the militia might be working elsewhere as well, but they should never cross the line between the two. For example, a lot of people in the French Resistance were working for the Germans. I'm not saying that they're opposing sides in our case, but you could be in the militia, and when the militia calls for a training, you go to that. But when you're not in training or not on call in the militia and you're off on your own time, if you want to be part of a security team or a cell, then there's nothing that prohibits you from doing that. Now, let's think back to the founders. The Committee of Safety did not send a bunch of Indians to the harbor in Boston to dump tea in the harbor. The Committee of Safety did not send people out to the streets to grab the tax collector, tar and feather him, kidnap him, tote him around town with funny signs hanging from his body, even in the winter, in the cold weather, where some of them died. The Committee of Safety did not direct people to tear down tax collecting offices, warehouses, and even two governors' mansions or homes. These people were acting independent of the Committee of Safety. There's a very good likelihood that there was an association between the two. But the IRA never acknowledged that they were working with Sinn Féin and vice versa. And everybody knew they were working with them. For our own safety and security, though, if you're in Committee of Safety and Militia or Militia and working with a security team or a cell, I would never let the other side know, because the Militia and the Committee of Safety are open. And especially early on, when you don't know who might have joined and patted you on the back and told you how good you are, you don't want to jeopardize your ability to perform the duties that you choose to perform by making friends with somebody that you don't know. You want to stick with people you know. You want to make the decisions on your own. Or if, in the case of you're a security team and you've got some older elements of that team, appoint them as kind of a committee, the civil authority, to evaluate the target, the potential, what the pros and cons of what hitting this target would be, if they would be detrimental to the overall cause, to put up the arguments for why we did this and the justification or rationalization for it. But they're two separate elements until we get to this third step that we began talking about at the end of last week and I'm going through right now. So you're not going to go down and say, do you want to join a security team? If I wrote an article, Our Security Team. If you just search Our Security Team in quotes and then put Outpost next to that on Google or any of the search engines, it'll take you to that article. If you do Leaderless Resistance, Lewis, L-O-U-I-S, Beam, B-E-A-M, an Outpost, you'll find it on my page. If, without the Outpost, you'll find it on the Internet. And understand that these are very secretive organizations. We had a security team in Florida. When I got back from Waco at the airport, they were waiting armed outside the security environs, armed, just to make sure that nothing was going to happen to me when I got off the plane. My getting on the plane on the other end, we used deception and let the FBI agents think that I was going to Colorado, and any conversation about going back to Florida was conducted down on the streets or away from where we could be talked to. Now, maybe it was overkill, but it was a good exercise in that you can deceive them, because we believed that the FBI agents were waiting for my arrival in Denver when I got back to Orlando, but just in case, the security team was there to make sure that I didn't get arrested. Now, why would I get arrested? I don't know that it matters that much in this country anymore. You can be arrested for just about anything at any time, even if the FBI lies to you, and that happened to Ron Cole in Colorado, where the FBI said, look, we just want to talk with you. And so they met at a restaurant. When Ron left the restaurant, he was thrown on the ground and arrested. They lied to him. So they're not honest people. But remember, your security teams and your leaderless resistance cells are operating totally independent of. You're actually operating as outlaws. You're, in a sense, your Robin Hood. But so if you get any bad, good stuff, you can give it to the poor. But you are not acting in a lawful capacity any more than the Indians in Boston, those who paraded in New York and Boston and South Carolina, paraded in other places, paraded tax collectors through the streets, tarred and feathered, or tore down buildings. They were outside the law. They were willing to take the risk. Now, that is a nudge to get the ball rolling as they start joining together and become more effective and more disciplined and more productive in their operations. That ball begins rolling even more. Now, when the reality comes that something is really happening in this country, that's when the Committee of Safety and the Militia step in and say, we are going to assure that the continuity of our communities continues and that the safety of our citizens is assured. So your role as committee and militia doesn't come into play except by observation. And I've got a theory in the Patriot community. A lot of bad things have been said about me over the years, but I'm going to tell you, I will not say anything bad about a Patriot. I would rather say nothing than say something bad. About a Patriot activity, I would rather say nothing than something bad. I don't have to offer an opinion. If it's not good, I hurt the cause by offering it. I help the cause by keeping my mouth shut. So the militia and the Committee of Safety, if they can't go along with the activity of the cells or the security teams, they need to keep their mouth shut.
Yes, don't say anything bad.
They need to not make judgment calls. Pardon? Okay.
Don't say anything bad about your fellow compatriots. It just does nothing but create more division within the community. And now we have too much of it is.
You don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all.
I got a question, real quick.
I'll answer it.
Patriot? Yeah.
Okay. What gives self-appointed Committee of Safety legitimacy? It's not self-appointed. The Continental Congress that they had in 2009 was self-appointed. These guys appointed them as delegates from California, Arizona, New Mexico, all the states that participated. They appointed themselves, and then they went to a Continental Congress, as they called it. Now, if I'm a Committee of Safety, I'm a member of this community. Now, as a member of this community, I'm not self-appointing myself to say, hey, neighbor, I think we need to work together to make sure that we're safe from invading Indians, invading Martians, or any other problems that might arise. I think that we need to work together to make sure that if there's a shortage of food, we'll work amongst ourselves to do what we can to provide food for our families, medical care, shelter, and those things that are necessary. Now, the committees of safety were not elected back then. The officers of the committees of safety were elected, and they usually serve for 6 months or 1 year. But there was no self-appointment in us collectively establishing our right to self-defense.
Very true. You know, when the legitimacy for everything comes, you know, the legitimacy for anything comes from we the people. If we decide it's legitimate, it becomes legitimate. If we believe it's legitimate, it becomes legitimate. For instance, we the people believe that Federal Reserve notes were legitimate money, and because of that, they became legitimate money. It's what we make of it. You know, the Founding Fathers, when they created the Committees of Safety, they had no legitimacy per se to stand on, except for the fact that they were going to be free no matter the cost. That's what gave them the legitimacy, and the fact that they were willing to stake all for it. And then the people got behind it. Public support gives it legitimacy. And the Constitution itself clearly states that we the people can change or abolish our government at any time, and our history. The fact that
the Declaration does.
Or the Declaration does. Because that alone, and our own history, where the Committees of Safety were formed and then started engaging in continental congresses and constitutional conventions, that is our legitimacy. Our history, our very history, gives them legitimacy.
Now, TC, you said we have city and county and state governments now. They had city, county, and colonial governments then. Some were good, some were bad. Some were pushed aside because committees of safety created. Now, remember, speaking for yourself in court, there are two ways to go, pro per and pro se. Pro se means I represent myself. Pro per means I stand on my own behalf or I speak on my own behalf. Now, if I'm in a committee of safety, I'm not professing to represent anybody except myself and those others who have joined me in the committee of safety. What can be illegal about me speaking for myself in a situation with other people that speak for themselves? The right of self-defense gives us the right to individually and collectively defend ourselves. If that responsibility expands to making sure we're fed, now, as we're talking about this progression, in the absence of if anything begins to go wrong with the existing town or county government where medical supplies, food, public services, public utilities are not available, is it wrong then to go a little further and say, okay, look, we've got to make sure that those people that aren't members of the Committee of Safety are fed too? Now, another concept that goes back in our history, all the way back to Magna Carta, is all military authorities shall be subordinate to a civil authority. What happened in colonial times? And again, this hinges on the legitimacy of the Committee of Safety. The militia in Massachusetts, for example, came under the authority of the governor, the royal governor, and through the governor to the counties, what they call the county courts. There were two kinds of courts, one that held court and the other one was actually a legislative body. So the authority was to them, but also then that was delegated down to the cities, towns, or committees of safety, because the committees of safety existed in those towns that weren't big enough to have a city hall or a town meeting. And they had responsibilities like fence reeves and hog reeves and road surveyors and things like that. So now when the government abandoned its responsibility on the crown or refused to abide by the original constitution or charter for Massachusetts, the militia said, okay, we're transferring our allegiance. Since you're violating the constitution or the charter, we're transferring our allegiance to the Committee of Safety, which is our community, and we're looking for our own self-defense. There was nothing wrong with what they did. How can there possibly be something illegal about assigning that responsibility for self-preservation to a government of the people when the instituted government does not abide by the contract? Now, if you were here for the first three shows on this subject, we went through a petition. That petition enumerated a number of items where the government has violated the Constitution. There are more. We limited it. We made it obvious ones, ones that almost everyone's aware of. But if that government has violated the Constitution, as happened in 1774, then what you have two choices. You either submit or take on that collective right of self-defense. Now, do you want to submit? If you do, I would suggest you shouldn't even be here tonight. Just accept that the government, acting within the Constitution or not, is the only authority, and that we have given up our right by instituting a Constitution, creating a Constitution, instituting a government based on that Constitution, and fully and honestly expecting that they would abide by that Constitution, and they have breached their contract under that Constitution, then you will see that we either submit or we take that natural right of collective self-defense and go back to do exactly what the Founding Fathers did. If you judge that they were wrong, then you can judge that we were wrong. But what we're talking about is not textbook history, but I've studied American history. If you read the end of the Revolution, beginning of independence, you'll find that April 19th, 1775 was not the start of the Revolution. It was the start of open hostilities, but what led up to that might surprise you. Tens of thousands of people with rifles going to courthouses demanding that judges resign. Would they have shot the judges? Who knows? Apparently the judges thought that they might be shot, so they resigned. How about General Gage twice going to send troops out to stop these type of activities where they shut down the court and forced the judges to resign and realized that they had more people armed than he had armed. They had more people armed than he had troops on the American side of the Atlantic Ocean. Were they wrong? Were they illegal? At the beginning of the petition, it lays out what the founders gave us. And this is from the Declaration. The government, on July 4, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was formally signed. This magnificent document provides an insight into the thinking of the Founding Fathers. For example, it provides their explanation of the purpose of government. Quote, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men deriving their just power from the consent of the government, the governed, end quote. Those rights therein mentioned are enumerated as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Clearly, they have provided us an understanding of government. The government was instituted to serve the interests of the people, not to serve the interests of the ruler, large corporations, which concept was so prevalent in Europe. They also provide us the reasons that they had taken on the formidable task of separating from England. Quote, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. They also explain the difficulty in coming to the point of action with the explanation that prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. Next, they explain the obligation they impose upon the future should events demonstrate that the government has deviated from its proper purpose. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide for new guards for their future security. Now, if that, I am preaching to the choir, but in answer to that question, by what authority do we do this? By what authority did they do it back then? By what authority did they leave us this instruction sheet called the Declaration of Independence to guide us should the need ever arise again to dispose of a despotic government and return to the constitutional government that was given us as our birthright? I don't know any other way. So, that aside, I hope I've answered your question. I don't remember who asked it, but if that didn't answer it, I don't know how to answer it. So, where were we otherwise? Maintaining flow of goods, communications, and utilities is a primary duty for those not otherwise assigned. As the acquisitions increase, so too will the manpower needs to maintain and operate these facilities, being flow of goods, communication, and utilities. So militia is always there to stand in, to be a substitute worker if necessary, to have somebody there to make sure that there's no sabotage or efforts to undermine the flow of goods, the communication, or the operation of the utilities. Now, judicial duties. Judicial systems are necessary to the safety of a community. If the local judiciary is unable to perform its function, it will be necessary to establish a court system for criminal complaints and to try those inimical to the Constitution. The judge's role in court is to assure that a fair and orderly trial is conducted. Determination of guilt and punishment should be left to the jury. That's the way it used to be. That's the way it will be if the committees of safety have to establish a judicial function within any communities. Judicial committees or appointees should coordinate with others in similar positions to provide for a degree of standardization to the practices to be employed. Now, that means other counties in your state, any judicial committee needs to work with the others and see if you can come up with some standards. We've lost history. History 150 years ago started getting taken away from us, and so none of us is old enough to remember how the courts operated then. We can read, and I read different times, different places. Courts were handled a little differently, so it wouldn't hurt to coordinate within a state at least how we're going to affect the practice of judicial function during this interim period while we're waiting for our constitutions to be restored. Civil matters need not be dealt with in these uneasy times. I've addressed that earlier. Civil matters are not important enough. They involve two individuals, perhaps a few more on occasion, but they're not worth the aggravation they would cause absent
firm understanding on what money is, absent a firm understanding on what the value of money is, which will be changing drastically over the period of this whole process. Okay, so that finishes the fourth or the third element in the progression of the plan. Now, does anybody have any plans on that?
Yeah, we do have a question, though. What's going to make these people stand down? The Crown didn't listen to our petitions. We revolted. And I think that we're in a much different position here because of that, though. The king, those nobles, those dukes and barons and counts, didn't live amongst us. They weren't here living on our streets and our towns and our cities. They weren't here.
Well, they were absent, but so are the people in Washington as far as that goes. One of the big differences between now and then, though, is back then the British troops were stationed in Boston, in New York, and a few other small arsenals, mostly along the coast, protecting the shipping lanes. Now we've got, in the words of the founding fathers, a standing army of over a million men in this country, a standing army of over a million men, and how what we have today would be perceived by the founding fathers. To them, the standing army was those guys in Boston that shot some people in a massacre and were acting in the capacity that now is filled by the police. Now, the people that shot the civilians in the Boston massacre had to stand trial for what they did because very rigidly the military shall always be subordinate to the civil authority. Had the governor, Hutchinson, given them permission to use their firearms, they would have been totally within their right and they would have not, in that specific instance, and would have not stood trial. As it was, they did not attempt to secure Hutchinson's approval, therefore they were convicted of killing the people at the Boston Massacre, some of them were. Today, the cop is the British soldier and Governor Hutchinson. He is the military authority and the civil authority in one shot. The founding fathers never conceived that that would happen. Their whole fear of a standing army was just a bunch of redcoats that still had to get the civil authority before they could use force except in self-defense. Now we've got police that get paid vacation if they shoot you. So we've got a different situation here than we had then, and I think I'm straying from the question, but to understand the difference in the playing fields that we have now and what we had then, now as far as getting them to stand down, the whole idea of the petition presented in the first three programs on this is saying this is our demands. Meet them or else. We want you to go back into compliance with the Constitution. Now, there are some things that in there that are not within the authority of the Constitution, and in those we've asked that they prepare and submit to the states amendments to the Constitution for the ratification of the states if they so choose. Simple request to term limits and repealing the 17th Amendment. But that's up to the states because those are the higher-level decisions. It would not be consistent with the Constitution for us to force that on them. Okay, somebody repeat the question. I've strayed way far away from it, apparently. Or not straying from the question. Did I answer the question?
I think you did.
Okay, so where are we now then? Any more questions regarding that third phase?
Any other questions out there, anybody? Let me check the switchboard real quick. Yes, we do have a caller on. Caller, area code 228, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Hi, did you have a question, comment? You had your hand raised.
I'm just, I was just listening. I don't know how I got to the queue. I was just checking it out.
Oh, okay. Well, then, your hand was raised up there, so I brought you in. But if you're just listening in, we'll mute you back in and we'll keep continuing on.
All right,
now, if you do want to come on and say something later on, just I think you press 1 and it'll put your hand back up. It's like, teacher,
okay,
I got to go to the bathroom.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh.
I said, not a problem. I could do that. Thanks.
All right, you take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right, so I think we're pretty much done there. So moving on.
Okay, let's go on to the next step in the process.
Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. We do have a question. We do have a question here. Airwolf, how many COS in a state, and what are they going to do? Go tell the government under the Fed government they are fired? You know,
let me answer that. How many COS is in a state? Hundreds, thousands. How many at the state level? Probably one from each county. But if they got together and said, we're a big county and you're a small county, we want three representatives where you only have one, that's up to the state. You know, you can't change the Constitution in the state. The people in the state have to determine in this instance where we're not really in compliance with the Constitution, but we do believe in representative form of government, they have to determine for themselves how many is the second tier. The first tier, and we're not there yet, so the second part of your question will be answered in a while. But the first part, how many, you could have 30 little committees of safety in one county or just one in one county. So how many you have in the county, remember it's tier, but the top tier is the state, the second tier should be county. How many you represent in each county will have to be determined by those counties agreeing or through consensus or vote or however, determining how they're going to allot their representation to the state level. Does that answer it? I don't have the answers here. This is what I feel would be best. Let me put it clearly. As near as I can tell from constitutional times, back then in the 1700s, the county cities would participate at county. County would participate at the provincial level, and then they would send theirs up. I have not gotten a good accounting, but I see in many cases where can't think of the counties right now, but I've seen some counties mentioned as having a committee of safety and sending their delegates to the provincial level. So apparently for them, county was the tier before. Now, whether as near as I can tell, too, the towns, and we go back to what John Hancock said on the front of the committee.org page, he asked all the towns to create committees of safety. Well, you can't have every town, no matter how big or small, send people up to the provincial level, and we do have indication that there were some county committees of safety, so I can only make the assumption that within a county, all the cities would come together within the county, however many was necessary, one from each committee or two from each committee, and at that point then that was the county, and then the county would go up to the provisional level, whether they distributed that based on population or, you know, increased the number of delegates for increased population. I can't find anything to support it. So I think that decision, given 150 or 200 years of neglect in keeping our history alive, that it would be fair to say that the people themselves could make the determinations as to how they were going to allot those delegations.
MD, you asked a question here. How will we institute a national government inside the beltway that is representative? I mean, physically get the old people out and the new ones in. Well, you know, that comes from not voting in McCain anymore. That comes from you, the people, stepping up to the plan and going in, taking those.
Well, I think he means through the plan, not trying to back up now. You're going to have to wait. That's
okay,
down the road. We're not there yet. We don't even have a whole state under Committee of Safety Control yet. But this plan goes to that point. And, you know, we're about 30% through the plan right now. And then there are some tangents off of the plan. One is a declaration of dissolution. Another one is more detail on the economic solution. It's not a simple process, and I can't lay it out in a few words, and I can't say that I'm right. What I'm doing is laying out a foundation. When we're done with this program, it'll be reconciled into a written document subject to abuse by anybody, because I'm just putting a piece of paper on the table and saying, let's start here. I think this would work. If you've got positives or negatives about it, when we get to that point, we'll again, ask you to participate and make recommendations as to what you think would be appropriate. I'm only offering what my judgment indicates or what I have gleaned out of the history that I have read. So we'll get to the national level, and I think that you'll see why it's stepped up slowly. Now, at any point, at this point, by the time we're halfway done through this third level, we might have 435 members or 400 members of the Congress decide that they were going to go to France on a fact-finding tour, and that fact-finding tour to be to find a place of permanent residence. At any point, and as Randy mentioned earlier, at any point, by bringing this slowly escalating pressure on government, we want our government back and working towards the true objective of putting the fear of God and the people in the government. When that trips the wire and they say, oops, we screwed up, we're in for a pile of shit, we better do something about this, pull out that petition, let's see what we can do. There's no telling how they're going to respond. I would guess that initially their response is going to be their typical arrogance. Well, screw you, we're the government, and we got all the guns. But if we can nurture some of those guns into coming onto our side, if we can start securing county after county or state after state, somewhere along the line, reality might hit them on the side of the head with or like a 2x4 with or without a nail in it. Hopefully with a nail in it. But that's vengeance. That shouldn't be. But so this slow escalation and this coordination is necessary to keep the cohesiveness in government. Remember, we've got a lot more sophisticated society, a lot more technologically advanced than back in the matchlock days of the Revolutionary War, where people were fighting with bird rifles that, you know, if you weren't 30 feet away from the guy, you couldn't really hurt him with some of these rifles that they started with. But they, as they escalated, they got cannon, they got better rifles, they got the Brown Besses, or was it the British ones? But they started getting standardized rifles, better rifles. But as you move forward, as you roll along and start proving what you're going for, and in our case, what we're going for is very simple. It's a document that all of them have sworn to uphold and defend. So I think so we will get to that, MD, but you're going to have to get inside D.C. early and enforce. Okay, let's go back to those operation centers. Those operation centers are probably connected to the government, but no, we don't have to. What we have to do is try and liaison with people in those places in D.C. And let me suggest, MD, that maybe the Maryland Committee of Safety, knowing people in that area, would be an ideal point of contact for liaisoning with people in agencies of the federal government. Now, we're concerned with some agencies, others we're not. Health, education, and welfare, as far as I'm concerned, if they sank yesterday, I'd be happy. Department of Defense, Department of Treasury, and even at this point, the Department of Justice would be good ones to start getting a liaison with, start getting opening communications up with, and set some acceptable demands and even be negotiable about them standing down and not defending the rebel government, but holding their responsibility to the American people in abeyance, except to the extent absolutely necessary until such time as this matter resolves itself. But, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself. So let's back up. And that's a preview of what the answer to your question is. And we have a webpage here on you have tread on me. What's the matter here? I'm going to have to rely on you, Randy. I lost the chat angle.
Just refresh it. I had to do the same thing just now. Chat angle, I guess, had a problem, so you just have to refresh the page. I'm back on. That's pretty much what they were saying, though, is, you know, National Park Police, Capitol Police, Metro Police, FBI, CIA, DOD, DC, National Guard, blah, blah, blah. The Fed is jamming me now.
Well, the idea, though, is to create a scenario where they will hold in abeyance any orders by the government or their superiors that are not consistent with the Constitution. You know, the organization Oath Keepers, you've got a lot of cops that have signed that. I don't know where they're going to fall, but if we started out head-on in confrontation, I would guess they would follow orders, not really knowing what to what side to take. A lot of people speculate, they took the oath, they're going to walk away. Yeah, they're going to walk away from their job, their means of providing for the family. In an open face-on confrontation, you wouldn't know what to expect. But by taking the slow and progressive method, if they begin to sense that this movement is going to go somewhere in this country, they might keep their oath and join the people that want to restore the Constitution.
Yes.
And that's where the liaison becomes necessary, to let them know that you're not our enemy unless you make yourself such. You are our friend unless you choose to be our enemy.
Yes, and that's the point I want to stress here. You know, all the things that we're talking about, what we're talking about here is a theoretical, for instance, what might happen. You know, everything that we're talking about, though, with the committees of safety, the goal is for that peaceful resolution, because the committees of safety are going to offer the only chance for that peaceful resolution. If they can see the people getting focused and directed instead of fragmented and fractionalized and divided, they just might become scared enough to back down and say, you know what, we might have to put a stop to this and come back in 50 years and try it again.
Airwolf, you're jumping the gun. No, you don't put demands. It's possible that we could write a petition. Remember, the petition at the beginning was to the Congress, the United States. It is possible, if a state committee wanted one, that we could develop a petition for the state as, and I hate to put it at demands. I mean, Randy likes the term demands. In fact, they are, but it's a petition.
It's a petition. Petition for redress
of grievances. The Olive Branch petition was demands. But it was presented as a petition because either call him a son of a bitch or, look, we're on opposite sides, let's talk. And I'd rather say we're on opposite sides, let's talk, than say, hey, you son of a bitch. Now, we know the United States government says, yeah, we'll negotiate if you give in to all of our points but before we sit down at the table. That's not a nice guy, and we need to be nice guys in this country. We need to have integrity. So they can be developed for the state level. And again, like I say, this plan was written by me. I talked to Randy a little bit about it, but I don't think many modifications came as a consequence of that. But we did talk about the possibility of somewhere in here inserting a petition of state demands, which is not done now, and that's why we want to get input along the way. So as we go along and we get to the state level, you know, start thinking about where we would insert this petition, Olive Branch petition, to the state governor, to the entire state legislature, really. It's not just the governor, it's the legislature as well. And if it's a necessary step in this progression, then it needs to be inserted. I mean, I'm just trying my best, and that's probably, hopefully, 50% good, and so I expect the other 50% to come from those of you that are willing to help us in finalizing this plan into something that's viable and has the potential of being successfully completed. So, any more questions standing, or shall we go on?
No, you know, I want to make a point here. You know, if you have a single committee of safety in your entire state with three guys, and you try to enforce the will of the people through those three guys, you are going to get knocked down. That is a reality. Three guys don't mean crap. We see that all throughout the country. Hell, millions of us divided don't mean crap. But now imagine those millions of people in every single county, in every single state, united upon a common course of action. That is how we become stronger. That is how we create change. Schaefer Cox did it in Alaska. He made his local government start behaving. He's got the support of the local community, including the local military base. Imagine that. And for all the naysayers out there who say it can't be done, I tell you to look to Alaska. If you still say it can't be done, then I say you just need to go find something else to do, because you're just going to keep bringing the rest of us down out there. It can't be done. Schaefer Cox has already proven that. Now the question is what are the rest of us going to do to emulate that?
Yeah, for those who don't believe it can be done, you have two choices. You either take on the government, wait for Lexington and Concord, then take on the government, or wait until they come to take your guns, and you will have your first and last stand at the same time. An alternative, quite simply, is bend over and grab your ankles. If you're looking for restoration of the Constitution and you're committed to that cause, what better way can we possibly come up with is one that is designed to not wait forever to see if the government will change, but to begin taking action, and begin taking that action in such a way that violence and blood is minimally shed, and continue progressively as necessary, escalating as slowly and meticulously as possible to try and convince the government in Washington and or your state government to realize that they need to fear God and the people. So, I mean, I've heard people say, well, waiting for Lexington, Concord, you know, the Arizona border issue. I know when everybody supported the Republic of Texas and Richard McLaren back in the 90s until the government came to get Richard McLaren, and then nobody wanted to go down. A few people went down. They were arrested on the way in. But en masse, they didn't go help Richard McLaren, who was trying to establish a self-proclaimed government. I can't say I blame that. But the thing is, you're not going to go, you know, history or recent experience indicates you're not going to go and support somebody in another state if there's something that happens right now. Maybe, I mean, slowly the Arizona border is getting attention and people are vacationing down. They're going down there for short tour of duty. But look at how long it's gotten that movement going to go down and defend our borders. So, unless we take, if we leave it to the government, they will pick the time that all the guns are gone. They will pick the time on when they come to arrest the key people in the Patriot community. They will pick the time. They will pick the time. They will pick the time. That will cause our defeat because they will strategically implement things in such a way that they'll come as a surprise to us. They'll be over in 24 hours, 48 hours, and there's nothing that we can do to respond. On the other hand, and this is true in any war, taking the initiative gives you an advantage. The element of surprise gives you an advantage. Now, some of the surprise goes away because we're talking about a plan. But if we're going to pursue this, this is probably the safest possible means of restoring the Constitution. I can't think of anything. Nobody's ever proposed anything that even comes close to this.
We've got a caller on. Welcome aboard, MD. How are you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, not too much. How are you doing today?
Okay. Aside from all the D.C. shenanigans, I got a question about a committee of safety that wants to work legitimately within local government. If we try to relate... If we go to approach a local government and say, we as a committee of safety or as a people want to work with you, and they say, yes, that's great, we welcome you, can we go in there and use the committee to, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say here.
As an advisory board type thing?
As a representative so that it still functions as a committee of safety. It's still there, but it's also representing people so you don't have the pure democratic thing going on at a town hall meeting, but a representative group.
That's good for the committee and it's good for the community. And if you think about it, the petition is predicated on saying we want to work with you. Here's our advice on what you should do if you want to.
We're actually down to our last 90 seconds, our 90 seconds to a minute. So,
okay, thanks.
Closing thoughts here. But, yes, that is a great idea, and that's actually what the committees of safety used to do. I mean, they were involved in their local politics on a daily basis. That was their role. That's what we need to get back to.
And that's it. We're going to keep the doors constantly open. We're going to reach out and try and liaison with people, try and get not the bad guys. So that the whole thing is it's got to be – everybody's mind's got to be on a positive resolution. Let's get this over with. Let's minimize the amount of damage and bloodshed. But we want our Constitution back, and we're going to pursue until we get it. And the farther you make us go, the more tragic the episode will be in our history.
So, yeah, I mean, if one day we have committees of safety in every county and every state and the government says, well, you know what, it was a good run. Yeah, here's your country back. Great. Not a bullet, not a shot was fired. Not a person had to, well, not a person had to die in that conflict. Not a person had to die in that conflict. But, I mean, if we could get it back peacefully, that's what I'm going for. But if not, then how far are we willing to go to be free and to not be slaves? That's what I'm saying. So that being said, everybody,
hey,
go ahead.
Thanks for listening. Come back next week.
All right, and there's a link at the bottom of the page. Join the Committee of Safety mail list today. If you're interested, get on there. That's where we're going to be sending out information, updates, email, whatever, messages back and forth. You can communicate through there. Talk to you soon, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Everybody have a great night and be safe. Bye-bye.
Still there, Andy?
I'm still here. That ending kind of crept up on me, so I wasn't...